Hello, and thank you for joining us today on the Gentle Art of Crushing It show, where we focus on learning and sharing with our listeners all there is to know about how to create success in our lives. This show stands on the shoulders of giants. Our mission is to empower and inspire our listeners to create the life of their dreams whilst having a blast in the process. Let's celebrate life together. Welcome to the show.
I like to make a difference, like to prove myself where I am.
So I didn't like not having a job.
Yeah.
It was actually at a call center right next to my home. AT&T actually owned a big part of this call center. So I worked as an AT&T representative. I was working in sales. Sales is good. I mean, I didn't actually find myself good in sales. I was always overachieving, so I did like what I'm doing, but I wanted to scale. So that's why I joined another company where I did actually scale. I've been promoted to from cold caller to acquisition manager. Then I found myself good in data analytics leadership. So I was promoted to a client success manager. And then I started to look into working privately with clients.
That's awesome. That's awesome. So you were working for a call center. Is that the call center that the one I met you at? How did you get there? Right. So I had my self storage business, right? And I was looking for help.
All right. Welcome to another episode of The Gentle Art of Crushing It. I'm your host, Sean Graham. And today with me, I have a very special guest. His name is Saif. He also goes by Leo. And Saif is one of my virtual assistants who focuses on deal acquisitions for self storage. Saif, welcome to the show. How are you doing, man?
Thank you, Sean. I'm doing great. What about you?
I'm doing fantastic. So, tell the listeners a little bit about yourself. Let's start with, where are you calling in from?
Egypt. From Alexandria, Egypt.
Alexandria, Egypt. Isn't that cool? Now, for those who don't know, I have a team of virtual assistants. Saif here is one of my top ones. He just focuses on self-storage deal acquisitions, building relationships, and really just helping me weed through all the potential properties that aren't any good, right? And so we can find these self-storage deals that actually may make sense. And his job is to narrow everything down and focus on the checklist, all the criteria we have, and figure out like, hey, here's a potential opportunity. Here's some land we could develop. Here's a self-storage facility that may make sense. And he's been doing great at that. He's been with me for about a year now. But Saif, tell us a little bit about yourself, like your background, you know, what you studied before, and, you know, kind of your background as a in the professional world over there and as a VA.
Definitely. Well, actually, originally, I come from a petrochemical engineering faculty where everything that we do is based on the foundation of data and analytics. And honestly, I was pretty shocked when I actually went into the VA or the real estate field, because no one actually did put enough attention in the details and the data that can control everything. You can actually control the market using data. So that's why I'm putting a lot of my experience into what I'm doing now, into the VA work.
That's fantastic. So you were an engineering degree, right? Your engineering background?
Yes.
Okay. And did you get your master's or your bachelor's in engineering? What was your educational background there?
I got my bachelor's in petrochemical engineering.
Petrochemical engineering. So that's impressive, man. I've told people about you, and I say, this is Saif. He's an acquisitions manager, and he's smarter than I am. That's no joke. Yeah, petroleum chemical,
yes.
Engineering. So, okay, for everybody wondering, it's like, well, okay, great. So you know the oil industry, and you're an engineer. That's a highly valuable skill set. Yet you're working in real estate. You're working for me. You're an entrepreneur as well. Like, you have your own things going. Why? Why not be an engineer?
Sometimes when I actually compare the two jobs here in Egypt, first of all, being an engineer is not amounting to anything here in Egypt. Actually, we have a lot of engineers. I'm not I actually was the top student in my faculty for two consecutive years. I mean, I did put a lot of effort into it, but when I actually went into the field, it didn't make any sense to me. I mean, engineers are not getting paid well, and I didn't find motivation. I didn't find somewhere where I would be actually happy working. I would not be closing deals, doing some actual work, trying to pursue this and that, trying to scale up. Engineering in Egypt, you wouldn't be able to really scale. So I didn't just find enough motivation in the work.
Gotcha. So engineers in Egypt, it's a bit of a oversaturated field, is what you're saying. There's more engineers than there are like top paying engineering jobs.
Yes, but it's not top paying. I mean, engineers are being treated like any other field. It's not something that is highlighted. It's just a regular job.
Gotcha. Right, yeah. And to me, I mean, an engineer, that's like a very impressive background. It's a very impressive degree. It's not easy, you know. It's a lot of high level math goes into an engineering degree.
It's definitely not easy. Like 5 years of torture.
Yes. So how did you make the switch? Like, so what did you do? You studied it. You became an engineer, and then what?
So I did actually get into the field. I worked in one of the highest reputation. It had actually a very big, quite reputation, and it's a very, very big company here in Alexandria, Egypt. I did only work for 2 days, only 2 days, and then I left.
2 weeks? Because on the first,
only 2 days, Wednesday and Thursday. Yes.
Wow.
Yeah, because on the first day, they were very not professional. They did not do anything all day. They just are sitting on their desks, not doing anything accomplished. And I just didn't like that. I mean, it is the easy life. It's nothing to do. It's just a desk job where you get to do a task or two in a couple of hours. So I'm not into that. You know what I mean?
So. Yeah, man. That's yeah. I mean, so you're basically looking for something a little bit more. It wasn't exciting to you. So that's what you're saying.
I like to make a difference. I like to prove myself where I am.
Yeah. As you should. You know, you get to do your career like one time, and you might as well do it in the way you want and have fun and do something you enjoy. So so kind of walk me through that. So you left after a couple of days, and then what happened? How did you kind of transition over into the VA world, and what did you go do? I know you were working for a call center before. Did you go right to them, or mm-hmm. what did that look like?
So I didn't like not having a job.
Yeah.
I was actually at call center right next to my own. AT&T actually owned a big part of this call center. So I worked as an AT&T representative. I was working in sales. Sales is good. I mean, I didn't actually find myself good in sales. I was always overachieving. So I did like what I'm doing, but I wanted to scale. So that's why I joined another company when I did actually scale. I've been promoted to an acquisition manager from cold caller to acquisition manager. Then I found myself good in data analytics leadership. So I was promoted to a client success manager. And then I started to look into working privately with clients.
That's awesome. Okay. Just so you know, it's a little bit hard to hear you. So I think you got to, I don't know.
Really? If
you're, yeah, just a little bit. Okay. So either like maybe speak louder or like lean into it more or something, or turn it up.
Is it good now?
That's better. Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
You just sound like more reserved.
Okay.
Yeah. So Yeah, speak loud for sure. And I'll mark this little clip out to for them to cut out from for Vito okay. from the 8 minute mark is messed up.
Okay.
So you were working for a call center. Is that the call center that the one I met you at? How did you get there? Right. So I had my self storage business, right? And I was looking for help. I was looking for somebody who could just call for me, right? Because I'm calling every day. I'm calling owners. I'm trying to maintain relationships with owners, which in the beginning was okay, right? And that's how I found my first few self-storage facilities. But then after a while, it's like, well, I'm also the property manager, and I'm doing that. I'm also the accountant, and I'm doing the bookkeeping, right? And I'm giving updates to our investors, and I'm also searching for deals, and I'm also doing a bunch of other things, and I'm dealing with bank financing and applying for loans. And what I learned for myself is like, I can't do everything, right? I have to find teams of people who can go out and do these things. And so I started to slowly build up my my team, my business, using virtual assistants and remote employees from other countries. And you're one of the first ones that I worked with from Egypt, right? And so maybe kind of go back to there. Tell us a little bit about like what happened, how that looked, what that looked like, and then how we ended up where we're at today.
First off, when I met you, I was a client success manager at this company. This company did not provide service for storage facilities. So was more kind of work, but I found this subject, it was very intriguing. To myself, it's something that is fighting recession, something that is going to work for the long term. So that's why I did my own homework. And then I began to talk to you in meetings, and you kept providing me with material data for me to learn. It was impressive, and you need actually provide me with a lot of data. So yeah, I did like it, and we started working together.
Yes, yep, that's right. And then we were working together for like a couple months there, and then one day you called me on the phone, and you're like, "What did you say?" You go ahead. I'll let you tell it.
Yeah. I was leaving the company because, things weren't looking good for me. And if I left, there is no open position for self-storage or storage facilities. This category is not actually existing within this call center. So I told you, hey, I'm leaving, and probably it's not going to work for anyone. How about we work together? I mean, how about we scale the business up? You actually told me let's do it.
Yeah. So you basically said, hey, how about I just come work for you full time and work for you directly? And right. That's kind of how we got started. So let's kind of dive in now, right, to self-storage and to being an acquisition manager, kind of like what you do. Right, what you do for Maven Storage, Maven Equities, and like what does that look like on a daily basis?
I would actually start with the email campaigns. We definitely need to have a healthy email campaign, and that's why I'm using Google Streak. It is a tool that allows me to automate and personalize emails. The emails are sent automatically at their scheduled time frames, and they are customized to mention the recipient's first names, maybe their business names, and definitely the property detail for it to be catchy. And since all of that is automated, I can increase the open rates, the reply rates of my emails by using the titles. And now actually Streak has this new feature where I can customize the title to the subject of the email, which is catchy too, so I can put like something in the name of the company or the name of the storage facility that they own, so they know it's It's something very thoughtful for them. Also, Google Streak. I use Google Streak to track the open rates. Everything is trackable. And I get to decide when to follow up or when to move on to the next prospect based on the data that Streak provides me with. It helps me organize my pipeline, keep track of the status of each and every lead.
So, in other words, I think like what you're saying is you used, right? Like we'd get lists and you were using Google Streak to, or yep. You are using Google Streak to mass outreach to owners in a customized way. Is that correct?
Right. Yes.
So rather than, hey, I'm going to email every single person individually, or I'm going to send out one general email and everybody CC'd on it or BCC'd on it, right? You're able to send a very similar email, like basically the same email template to all of these owners. And you would also be able to integrate customized names for their name, the person's name, the owner's name, the business name, and kind of customize the messages a little bit so that it no longer was a mass general email, rather than you're just able to send out a couple hundred emails at the same time, and every email would mention that self-storage facility by name and the owner by name, correct?
Yes.
And how did that go? Like, how did that work? And, you know, what is the... Because you maintain that, right? To this day, you maintain that, and you're able to build the relationships, right? Some of those relationships have started over email, correct?
Yes. So since the emails actually do stand out, people are reaching out even if they are not interested. Like, for example, if the email is targeting people who are interested in selling their storage facilities, sometimes I would reach to a realtor that happens to have his name attached to a storage facility. So he would actually reply back like, hey, we can work together. We can do this and that. I can search for land opportunities for you. And then we actually start to build relationships and networking with these people.
Yep. That's awesome. Yeah, that's cool. And so I guess maybe talk about like some of the other tools and stuff that you've been able to use and, you know, what you have done, because you're also calling owners, right, directly. We haven't even talked about like land development, but tell me a little bit about this more. And I guess for the listeners, right, what's the benefit of hiring somebody like you, right? Like, and saying, hey, this person is going to come work for me, as opposed to like, okay, like, well, I'll just send out the emails myself and I'll just do that. Because Streak is more than that. It's a CRM. It's a CRM tool, right? So like, what other things are you able to do as the acquisition manager? Yeah, that's good, man. That is good. Yeah, you gotta listen. Half the battle is just getting on the phone and asking a question and then just hearing a person out. But again, like, okay, so why do you call as opposed to like, hey, I'm calling all the owners, right? Like, what is the goal here? Can you kind of talk a little bit about like what we'd look for with existing self-storage facilities? Like, what were we searching for, right? Because from my perspective, at the end of the day, your job is to filter out the 80-20, meaning get through that, like, let's just say 20% of people are actually worth talking to, right? 80-20 rule applies to everything. You can keep doubling it down. 80% are worth talking to, right? 20% are worth talking to, 80% are not. Out of those 20%, well, 80% of that 20% might fit the deal criteria, right? Of like by size, by rental rate. And then out of that 20%, it could be another 20% that like, hey, they're actually like interested and willing to sell. So there's all these things that we have to get through, all these hurdles, in order for it to be worth the time. And so from my perspective, the entire objective is to get through as much as possible so that I can talk to people who are qualified. They have like businesses that qualify, facilities that qualify. And we go through our checklist and figure out everything beforehand so that I'm not like wasting my time. And the reason is because I've been down that road so many times before, right? I've spent like dozens of hours going to a facility and, going through all the numbers, making offers, all of it. And then it's like, oh, shoot, it was in a flood zone. Like, how stupid. And like, you could have figured that out in like 2 minutes by going to the FEMA website, but it just wasn't on my radar. So maybe talk about some of the stuff that you look for with one, existing self-storage facilities, and then two, land development opportunities. And for those who might be wondering, what I focus on, right, is buying existing self-storage facilities and then developing either Class A or Class B self-storage facilities from the ground up. So I think maybe kind of go through a little bit, keep going with those details. So like what goes into what makes like a Class A facility in your mind, and like what makes a Class B facility, a Class C facility? And I know you don't have all that memorized. You have a document on it, but from what you do recall, give us a little bit about those details.
Yep, for sure. And I guess for those who might be wondering a little bit, like when we talk about the Class A facilities, you said average size of 100,000 net rentable square feet, but like what about on the low end, right? Because they're not all that size.
Yeah, I'd say 50, maybe 60,000 net rentable square feet. It's probably more of the minimum, but all of these metrics kind of make a difference in terms of what class the facility is, you know, A minus, right? B plus, B, like, and it's kind of, there's no exact line, but your job is to kind of go through and figure out everything that this facility has and then, right, come up with your assessment of the cap rate of what it should be and then come back to me and talk to me about it. Another thing is, right, cap rates, it's just one metric to measure, to evaluate the self-storage facility. There's also, right, like price per square foot. So you're looking at price per square foot, price per net rentable square foot. You're looking at like their current cap rates, right? And we typically plug in our own operating expense ratio in there, correct? Like we're not, you know, we have an idea of what facility is going to operate at. And when you're at a Class A facility, let's just say average of like 35% operating expense ratio. So we're able to get an idea of what their revenue is and what our expenses would be. And then to get the net operating income, right, and apply it to take it over the asking price and kind of determine like what that cap rate would be. And another way, right, though, to look at it is price per square foot. Like you are getting the metrics on the unit mix, calculating total net rentable square feet, or maybe they're going to tell you, maybe you have to go measure it yourself, right? Like using Google Maps and use the little measurement tool. We also use tools, right? StoreTrack? Yeah, StoreTrack is the one we use. And it's to help you determine all these questions that I'm going to have, but you can gather all the data, fill it all out, and then show it to me, correct? So let's talk a little bit about the land development opportunities, because you spend a lot of time searching for land development opportunities as well, right? What goes into that? What are you doing? Kind of what's your process and what does that look like? So you're basically saying like you're looking for facilities that we'd be interested in buying, but also in markets where you believe people would be interested in selling because they have other opportunities to redeploy that capital into, as opposed to just like, well, what are they going to do with it? 15,000 vehicles per day.
Yeah, that's good. What about population, right? Like what's kind of like the populations that we look for? And, and also like, let's just talk a little bit about supply and demand, right? Like saturation levels of square feet per capita existing versus like what we, because it all comes down to, like we can look at all these different metrics, but at the end of the day, all that matters is, I guess, would be two things. One, is there more demand than there is current supply? And then two, do the rental rates justify us developing a self-storage facility there? Correct?
Right.
What about like square feet per capita, right? Like what are we kind of looking for and how do we take a look at that and determine, is it oversupplied, is it undersupplied?
Yeah,
I think the state average in Michigan is somewhere around 7, I want to say. And then in Florida, it's like closer to like 8. But there are areas in Florida where like, hey, everything is full and they're at 15 square feet per capita. So, right, like what you do is really the process is we use StoreTrack. So people use Radius Plus or they can do everything by hand. For a while, we were doing everything by hand, meaning like get on Google Maps, right click and measure the length and the width of each building, how many stories it is and calculate the square feet, right? And if it's an indoor climate control building, maybe apply a ratio to exclude hallways and stuff to get the net rentable square feet. Then we started using StoreTrack more, which StoreTrack has been fantastic. And it's takes all the data that it has and gives you the details of each self-stored facility. Now, it's not 100% accurate. I'd say it's 80% accurate, right? But it gives us a pretty good idea because we can get in there. And it's like, hey, this facility is, you know, whatever, 20,000 square feet. Okay, so we know that one. And it gives you the square footage by radius, right? And how many are within 3-5 miles. We can also, though, recently we've been looking at drive time a lot more, correct? Like, tell us a little bit about the drive time and why that's important.
Right.
Like you have to, it's like, yeah, it's within, 2 miles straight line distance, but you have to cross a river and there's only one bridge and it's, 10 minutes down the road, that type of thing, right? Now, there's a mountain range in between. So it's like, it's clearly different. Or there's a big freeway in between, right? So there's a difference. Straight line distance only does so much. It's important to look at the drive time and see, okay, like this facility is within 5, this one's within 10 minutes, this one's within 15, and then calculating the square footage by drive time as well, right? And, one thing that I hate dealing with, right, too, is zoning. I hate dealing and figure out what zoning. So you take on a lot of that for me. What do you do there to make sure that facilities, like this potential land lot or this development opportunity is actually buildable? We're not just wasting our time. Yeah, and sometimes that involves calling into the local municipality and talking to the, I don't know what you want to call it, the zoning coordinator, and figuring out, like, is this even an option, right, to develop self-storage here? Or is it special use? Is it permitted? Is it not permitted? Is the zoning code ordinance on the website actually accurate? Those sort of things. So those are important as well. Yeah, I guess, Saif, what is next, right? Like you're working here, you're driven to do this. What are your goals, right, within the self-storage world here? Like, what are we looking for? What are you trying to do? What's, cause there might be people out there who are say, hey, yeah, I think we could work together, or, I might have an opportunity for you. What are we trying to accomplish? Yeah, man. So, what's the best way for people to, they say, hey, I want to talk to Saif some more. How do people reach out to you? No, but I mean, like, what's your email? What's your, you're using email, phone, right? If anybody just wants to chat with you, is there a good way to get a hold of you? Okay. We'll put your email in the description, but one email, right, is, you use info@mavenstorage.com. And that's the main email you've been using, in order to just talk to people and develop those relationships and, connect with brokers who might have land development opportunities for self-storage or existing self-storage facility owners. So they can always reach out to you at info@mavenstorage.com. But yeah, Saif, this has been fun. I appreciate you joining and getting on your very first podcast, correct? All right. You're going to be famous in no time. I hope you're ready for it, man. All right, Saif. I know you got to get back to the gym, right? Got to work on those handstand push-ups, correct? Beach day this weekend, right? Tomorrow? Okay, man. Well, thanks for joining us, and thank you for listening till the end. We really appreciate it. As always, if you enjoyed this episode, hit the thumbs up button. Give us a 5-star review. Very much appreciated. But yeah, I hope you really enjoyed that episode with Saif. Saif is a very smart guy.
he's been working with me for about a year now. He's based in Egypt. He has a degree in engineering, and he goes out and he finds opportunities for me and for Maven Storage. That's what he does. And the cool thing is that you can really, you know, you can build teams with employees from the other side of the world who, to him, he's getting a great salary, a great wage, and he enjoys what he's doing, right? And for me, it's much more affordable than going out and hiring a new graduate, right? Or an engineer from a United States college. So it's worked out fantastic for me. If you are interested at all, you know, in hiring or getting your own virtual assistant, go to mavensuccess.com. That's www.mavensuccess.com, and we can help you out. Hope you enjoyed the show and hope to hear more from you soon. Thanks, guys.
Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen, another episode of The Gentle Art of Crushing It. It was an amazing episode. We know we sure learned a lot, and we hope you did as well. We want to take a second and thank you so much for viewing or listening to this episode. And please just know that we only ask for one favor, and that is to make this life magnificent. Thank you, and have a wonderful day.